call me biased, but the Queensland Brain Institute is pretty unique. Our researchers study fundamental science, the healthy brain, and brain disorders all under the one roof. Understanding the potential impact of our research and hearing how people are affected by brain diseases drives our researchers to work harder and longer than they already do. In this special edition of A Grey Matter, we'll be hearing from Rachel Corbett, who shares her personal experience with dementia. Rachel's mum was diagnosed with Alzheimer's disease in her late 50s and lived for 10 years with the condition. Dementia, including Alzheimer's disease, is Australia's second biggest killer. It's a brain disorder with no cure, although QBI researchers are doing all they can to try to change that. Rachel is a writer, TV and radio presenter, podcaster, and creative coach. She spent the better part of a decade hosting breakfast radio shows across the country and regularly appears on TV shows including The Project, which is where I first heard her speaking about her mum's devastating disease.
Yeah, mum was... Gosh, it's interesting because my relationship with my mother was very complex for a lot of years. And the person that she was, the true person that she was, actually came out a lot more during the disease in the later years, because she had spent a lot of time in her life kind of putting up this veneer of everything's fine. So it was interesting that in some ways the disease kind of broke through that. But at her core, like, she was just such a positive, joy-filled, funny person. Like, I think to myself, I realise the more that I work in this business, quite often I do jokes and stuff, and when I got to know my mum when I got much closer to my mum in the later years, I realised, oh my God, I've stolen all of her material. Like, she was just so funny and loving and kind. And one of the things about the disease that was hardest to watch is she was so resilient. She came from very, very strong stock. Like, all of my mother's side of the family, they were fighters, all the women. And she, the whole time, even though she was literally falling apart at the seams and was completely out of control and had no control over her mind and what was happening, she kept, like, the chin up till the end. You know, she really tried her very best. She didn't want to worry anybody. She didn't want to make people feel uncomfortable. She was so attuned to how people felt in a room. She was so intuitive. Even in the later stages of her disease, she could tell when people were uncomfortable, and you could really see that. And she would sometimes, in some situations, when you would see somebody was uncomfortable, and I thought they were kind of trying to hide it as best that they could, but she would often go up to them and apologize. And that was in the later years when she could barely speak. She was still so keyed in to that kind of thing. So, she was a pretty amazing woman.
That must have been heartbreaking to watch her sometimes have insight into her condition as it progressed.
Ugh, I think the worst thing about her situation was that she knew it was happening the whole way along. Mm. A lot of people say, oh, you know, they disappear, they don't know who they are, they don't know where they are. And I always said, I wished that had happened to my mum. I wish she had no idea what was happening. I wish she had just gone quietly into the night and everything was... But the whole time until the end, I could see her inside this head that wasn't working, and you could see every time I looked at her, she was so terrified, and you could see, it almost felt like somebody looking at you from inside, like a jail cell, desperately trying to get out. She was so present right until the end, and aware of what was happening, and frustrated. God, she was so frustrated because she couldn't get her words out. She couldn't do anything. She couldn't, you know, and you could tell right until the end, she would constantly be like, oh, you know, really getting angry at herself at certain things because she just wasn't capable. So that was really hard to watch, her knowing what was happening the whole time.
When did you first start noticing symptoms? Did she tell you about it, or was it something that she tried to hide early on?
She tried to hide it. She wouldn't tell anyone. She didn't want anybody to know. She didn't want anybody to worry. It's funny. She said, I'm trying to think of the timeline, what date it would have been. I think it would have been around about 2004 was my sister's 21st birthday. And she always said, she never said it till much later, but she said that at my sister's birthday party, I felt something in my brain snap. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. I've always tried to think, like, gosh, what does that even mean? You know, what does that even feel like? And I kind of always thought that it was such a gradual thing. But certainly around about that time, 2004, is when we started to see certain things happening. You know, she was forgetting things. She was always very articulate. You know, she couldn't – she just wasn't talking right. There was obviously something going on, something was amiss, but she was always like, oh, nothing, everything's fine, and I think even when she went to the doctor and they sort of diagnosed her, she still kept it a secret from everybody, or I think her husband knew, but from us, certainly she didn't say anything, and I think for quite a long time, like I want to say maybe a year or a couple of years or something, we knew something was off. But she wouldn't tell us what. And I think I found out because I saw on their counter a letter from Alzheimer's Australia or something to do with Alzheimer's. And so that was kind of the first time that I realised, oh, this is what she had. But at that point, I had no idea what it was. Like I'd never really thought much about it. I certainly had never met anybody that had anybody who had gone through Alzheimer's, so I didn't really understand what it was.
Did you have any idea what dementia involved? I guess people in the public often just think, oh, you know, it's that disease that old people get when they forget about things.
And I think that's one of the reasons why I've started to speak more openly about it in later years, because I don't think that we have an accurate trail of what it is, and I think having that kind of information, knowledge is power, right? So when you're a family member about to go through something like that, you need to know what you're about to face, because I was certainly blindsided by it, and at the time I thought, good Lord, I don't know whether it would have been more scary to know about it, but I was just sort of knocked for six. But my kind of understanding of dementia, I had worked in an old people's home for my work, gone there for work experience when I was in high school, and I had there was only one woman in the ward that I was working in that had dementia, and I used to love going in and like sitting with her, and she had, you know, every day she'd forget who I was, but she was very calm and quiet and in her own world and in her bed, and she would obviously forget things, but that was kind of the version of events that I had in my mind, and mm-hmm. I didn't realise, which I obviously found out later, how violent and aggressive and sort of scary it is. I always thought, oh gosh, Mum will be peacefully sitting in bed, like it'll be so sad when she doesn't know me, but by the end of it I was thinking, God, I wish you didn't know who I was, because this is just breaking my heart, you know.
God, that's so sad. In terms of those later years, what did your mum do? What was her behaviour like?
You mean right at the sort of end?
Yeah, because you mentioned, you know, she was aggressive and she'd lash out to people, including you.
Yeah, it was sort of the last year that things really started to get that way. Mum had grown up, she had been in quite an abusive household when she was little, and that had played on her mind her whole life, even before the disease came about. It was something that she could never get over. And when the disease hit in the later years, she started to regress a lot back to that time. It was interesting so it was about a year before she passed that she had to go into a home, and that was because my stepfather was basically being woken up in the middle of the night, being belted. Like she would be bashing him, screaming at him. She would be impossible to calm down, so he was basically calling the ambulance all the time because she just would never sleep, even right until the end. I don't think she put her head down for more than an hour. And people that I've spoken to, I don't know whether this is the situation, but people that I've spoken to have said, you know, they sort of, if somebody with Alzheimer's goes to sleep, they might wake up after 5 seconds and think they've rested, you know, they don't realise that they think, oh, I've got to be up. And my mum was constantly on edge. There's a whole bunch of things that happened in our life that meant she was sort of really stressed and things. And in that final stage before she went into the home, I would go and stay with her. And she started doing this thing where she would, like, take me. She would stand at the window and sort of scream out the window, or she would take my hand. She would take me into the backyard and she would, like, be trying to hide me. And I didn't know, really know what was going on. And I spoke later on after she went into the home, and when she was in palliative care, I was speaking to my mum's sister. And, you know, there was a situation when they were kids when my grandfather was quite violent towards my grandmother, and they used to have to, you know, he would come home at the evening time and they would be looking out the window for him. And then sometimes they would have to go down and hide in the backyard. And so all of those things I started to realize, oh my God, that's what my mum used to do with me. She used to take me down to the backyard to hide, and she would be standing at the window waiting for Dad to get home. And, you know, all of this stuff, this horrible, horrible time in her life that she had spent so many years trying to get away from was just flooding in. And she just couldn't do anything about it. So when she eventually went into the home, she was terrified. She was really scared. I know she'd never wanted to go into a home, but it just got to the stage where it was physically and medically impossible to keep her at home without somebody around that had some kind of ability to sedate her, because she was waking up so violently. And then in that last year, I'm not sure whether it was I'm sure it was a combination of the disease, but also her being somewhere she didn't necessarily want to be, the fear, all of that kind of stuff, because I did feel like there was a lot of her still within her right until the end. But she just became so violent. She would be screaming, and I'm not sure whether it was because she could see that early sort of abuse happening in her mind. Sometimes that's what it felt like, because she would almost puff herself out sometimes, and after she'd kind of had a huge fit, she would almost look at you like, what just happened? You know, where am I? And it got to the stage where she really needed somebody around her 24 hours a day. The home where she was at, they just could not cope. She was the only person in there like that. And, you know, by the end, like, you get to the point where this person that you love is there. You can't physically be there 24 hours a day. You put your trust in people who were definitely trying their best. But I used to come over and Mum was covered in bruises. You know, I had one woman come in, one of the nurses come in and sort of say that they'd come into her room and the window was smashed, and they didn't know what had happened. Like, she just, she was just so violent and would spend so much time just sort of pacing the room, screaming, muttering to herself, yelling, like, just really scary stuff to see, you know, when that's not the person that you know.
It was quite a long time that she had Alzheimer's. I think I read an article that you wrote. She was diagnosed in her early 50s, and then it lasted for like a decade or something.
Yeah, 10 years. It was funny. People said to me that usually people with Alzheimer's, it's about a decade between when they get diagnosed and when they pass away. And they told me that sort of 8 years in, I guess. And I always thought to myself, gosh, Mum seems so strong. Like, I know she's mentally not capable, or things are quite, you know, difficult for her mentally. But physically, I thought, I can't work out how she's going to die. Like, I don't know how this is going to happen, because you sort of think of people who are going to pass away, like, there's a physical deterioration and a weakness and, you know, something that you can see, oh, this person looks like. And I just, gosh, it just seems so far away even at that stage. But that last year and the 6 months before she went into a home, I've never seen anybody go down quicker. She just she went down and completely changed. And in that last year, it became very apparent, oh my gosh, like something's going to happen here. So it was about 10 years. It was about 10 years between, or maybe a little bit further, sort of from when she was diagnosed or when we started to see things happening, and when she passed away.
Did you ever talk to your mum about her illness?
That was the hardest thing for me with mum. In the early days when she was still communicating okay, I took a lot of video of my mum over the years. A lot of it, I don't know how long it'll take me to watch it, but I feel like there's something important that I'm going to do with that footage. I'm just not sure what, but I interviewed her, must have been about 2009, I think, or 2010, because I wanted to sit down and talk to her about her disease. She was still able to sort of articulate things at that point. And,
Okay.
And she was talking about how, you know, she people would laugh at her all the time. She would go and do things at the shops or go to a cafe, and obviously the behaviour that presents when you're not, for want of a better term, normal or behaving in a normal way, people would think she was nuts or that, you know, she just really negative things. And I know she was trying so hard to continue living a normal life and to keep, because basically she ended up essentially stuck in the house, you know, because she couldn't drive. She got lost a lot when she went walking, and so you end up getting to the stage where you're pretty much trapped because you're terrified to go out anywhere, because a couple of times she had to call the somebody ended up calling the police because she, you know, she got completely lost. She didn't know where she was. So she would say that she would go and do things, go to a cafe, go to the shops or something, and she could see people snickering or laughing at her or making comments about her because she wasn't behaving normally or she was doing things that she couldn't control. And, oh, gosh, that used to kill me to hear that, because you just think there's nothing they can do about it. There's nothing she could do. She was trying her hardest to behave in a way that she felt was normal so that she could kind of slip under the radar and still, you know, appear normal to people, and people just weren't aware of what was going on. And I think in subsequent years, it's funny, obviously when you've gone through that, you see what it looks like. You can sometimes see it in other people, and I've often seen people out and about that I've thought, I think they might be, you know, I think they might have this. Or I've seen people who are obviously caring for somebody who are like, I think they might have this. And I've always tried very hard to be really sort of, you know, over the top, hey, you know, how's it going? You know, just trying to make something as easy as I can for people, because I'm aware of how you feel in that situation. And as a carer as well, taking my mum out, I always tried to take my mum out, do things, go have a cup of coffee, go for a walk, go and do stuff so she didn't feel like she was stuck in the house and she didn't feel like I was ashamed of her. That was really important for me, for her to feel like, hey, I feel really proud to be around you when we're out and about, because I knew she was really conscious of that. And in certain circumstances at cafes and things where people would be really accommodating and nice and understanding and open, it just lifts the pressure off you as a carer, because you always go into every situation thinking, how are these people going to deal with this? I'm fine. It's my mum. I love her. Like, whatever she does, it's fine. But how are these people in this environment going to deal with it? So it's really hard for the person to fit into normal life. And then when you put on top of that they feel self-conscious and embarrassed and all of those kind of things, like, that's no way for somebody to live. You know, that's no way for somebody to go through life feeling that way. You want everybody to feel, especially when it's not their fault, like, the way that they are is completely okay. So that was one of the hardest things for me to hear mum sort of talk about, was the fact that she sort of knew she was different, and that people found that difficult to deal with.
It's so debilitating, but also so common. You know, it's about, I think the latest stats are about 400,000 Australians currently live with dementia at the moment. But why do you think, you know, public awareness doesn't compare really to other conditions? Why do you think people don't talk about it enough?
I wonder whether, at the end, when I saw Mum the way that I saw her, I thought, gosh, this isn't a nice thing to talk about. You know, this sort of, I think there's a kind of resilience that you have when you're going through something like this, where it becomes such a part of your life that you're dealing with it, that you just need to get on with business. And you're also, like, I'm very conscious of the fact that, yes, I have close personal friends that I will talk to about things, but you don't need to dump stuff onto them all the time. And a lot of this stuff is really heavy that you see. So maybe people just kind of try to go on with business without burdening people, because it's a pretty icky thing to talk about. I know that somebody was telling me about the film that they brought out recently.
Still Alice?
Still Alice, yeah. I didn't go and see it because I just thought, I cannot deal with seeing anything that portrays this kind of disease. But some people that saw it actually said, oh, they portrayed it in this really nice way. It was kind of sweet. I'm not sure if that's the case, but I don't know whether we're a bit too careful about making sure that everybody feels okay about it, or that it doesn't seem terrifying. And while I understand, like, we absolutely have to give hope, like, there's no point in making people feel like there's despair. And I know that, you know, the research that's being done is amazing, and there is hopefully hope. But at the same time, nobody's going to feel compelled to donate to research or to do anything if they're not really scared about it. And I think we need to be more open about the conversation that we have, that it's really flippin' terrifying, and it is awful to watch somebody go through it, and it is a huge, huge burden emotionally on a family and on the person that's going through it. And so, I don't know, sometimes maybe these things kind of they come into sort of popular favour, you know. I don't know whether Alzheimer's is going to have its time where we start to open the conversation and talk about it more, and what the catalyst for that might be, because you're right, it amazes me that as many people are affected by it and will be affected by it. Like, the numbers are scary, and yet we just don't really talk about it.
I think the conversation begins with people like you, people who are in the public eye, sharing your stories.
Yeah, and I think that night on the project, and I got a lot of responses from people who said, oh my goodness, this is exactly what I went through. You know, I'm sick of this kind of positive message. Nobody ever talks about what it's really like and that kind of stuff. And what I saw was scary. It was terrifying. It was violent. It was emotionally draining. It was exhausting from a caring perspective, because, you know, you never, like, there was no sitting down on a couch watching TV with my mum. You had to watch her. It was like having a child that was in a room full of boiling hot pots and fiery pokers, and you just had to keep them out of the way of all of these bits of danger. You just could not walk away for a second. You couldn't. I had to go in. You know, if we went anywhere, mum and me had to go into the bathroom together, because I couldn't say just wait outside this cubicle, or just, you know, sit at the table, because mum wouldn't sit at the table. She'd walk off and walk onto the road, you know. So, it's pretty terrifying. And I think the only way that people are going to start to invest, or to be invested in it emotionally, is if we do start having these kind of icky, uncomfortable conversations that aren't very pretty, but are truthful and honest and are a reflection of what happens when somebody is affected by it.
That was Rachel Corbett sharing her personal experience of dementia. If you'd like to find out more about Rachel, her website is rachelcorbett.com.au. Scientists in our Clem Jones Centre for Ageing Dementia Research are working towards treatments for dementia, including a recent discovery that non-invasive ultrasound could be used to reverse the symptoms of Alzheimer's disease. If you want to know more about the dementia research underway here at the Queensland Brain Institute, visit qbi.uq.edu.au. I'm Donna Liu. Our podcast is produced by Jessica McGaw. If you enjoyed this episode, let us know on Twitter or Facebook. Tell your friends, or you can give us a review on iTunes. Thanks for listening.